Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com. While you guys are there at the websites checking out all the latest we have going on, make sure you join the RSS feed so you can get the shows delivered directly to you. And join our email list so we can get you guys caught up every week and up to date. For you guys that are new to the show, call-in numbers as always, 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334. For you guys that are in the listening queue, and there is always a bunch of you, we appreciate it. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so we'll know you want to be heard on air. Looks like Ed Martin will be a couple of minutes late tonight, and that's okay. That's all right, because I tell you, we've got a great show for you. One of the races that we have been covering in tomorrow's primary right here in Louisville, Kentucky, is the Jefferson County Attorney's race. And as everybody knows, I'm no fan of Mike O'Connell. And I'm very, very grateful that we have someone that's willing to step up to the plate and run against him. And lucky for you guys, we were able to tear her away from campaigning for about 15 minutes just to chat with you. So we want to talk with Jefferson County Attorney Karen Faulkner. Welcome to the show, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Ed, for having me on.
Well, I appreciate that. I tell you, you know, you there's been a lot of negatives coming out of Mike O'Connell. Last week, we kind of did a hands-off. I understand he went through a personal family tragedy with his son overdosing and everything. So we kind of took a hands-off approach. But we're really at a point now, with the election being tomorrow, that we need to get to listen to you. There are so many negatives about Mike O'Connell. I thought it was really fascinating that the first thing he did in a Courier Journal article, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, was start challenging you and trying to get negative against you as a candidate. And the Courier Journal actually applauded you, said you had a lot to offer, but just not right now. They really endorsed Mike O'Connell because they were scared not to endorse the machine. So the most obvious thing I guess we really need to do is kind of talk about, you know, why this race and why right now for you?
Well, I mean, that's a very important question. And, you know, unfortunately, the Courier-Journal chose to endorse my opponent, though they couldn't say anything negative about me, only that they felt my opponent had more experience. I would point out that my opponent did not have had the same experience running this type of office as I would walking into the office. But the reason I got into this race is because it's absolutely a time for a change. And I saw that need for a change, and the time to demand it is right now. Unfortunately, my opponent has done some things that have been very upsetting to me and to the legal community, and have not represented the citizens of this county in the way that he should. One of my biggest examples is his approach to expungements, how he opposed allowing the average person to get something expunged as simple as, you know, a speeding ticket. That would hold you back, or a fishing violation that would hold you back. And, you know, what he was doing was preventing people from moving on with their lives. And the county attorney is supposed to be a minister of justice. Ultimately, the law was made clear, the law that I felt was clear in the first place, but they had to point it out to my opponent. And all these people who spent years without their records expunged were able to go back and get this expungement at the, you know, expense of the taxpayer. And these people were without jobs and you know, other things.
And I was a victim of that myself. I we've talked about that on the air many times. I was actually illegally arrested back in July of 2012. And a couple of dumbass cops did their thing, put me in jail for no reason. Michael Connell's office, the chief of police, sent me an apology letter, profusely apologized for the actions of his officers. Everything should have been dismissed, expunged right away. But Michael Connell decided that since I've been critical of him, he kept that case open for a year and a half. So it literally kept me from finding outside income other than what I do here. And I suffered for it. And it's only because I'm a voice of Louisville, and I've been critical of his administration. So, you know, when you talk about those kind of things, if he's willing to go against somebody like me and he knows there's going to be backlash from it, what scares me the most is what he's going to people who essentially are powerless. Is that what scares you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've spent my legal career making sure that those who don't have a voice get a voice in the legal system. I've been a victims advocate with the Center for Women and Families. I've been a public defender working with both juveniles as well as adults. And now I have my own practice, and I also do court-appointed parents work. I have seen these problems. I've seen these problems in the, you know, over 10 years that I've been in the court system. I've seen how people can be treated, and, you know, how this one-size-fits-all policy is not working. You know, the thing is there are a lot of very good assistant county attorneys over there that would want to make other decisions, look at a case on a case-by-case basis. But my opponent is ruling that office with an iron fist, and they're not able to actually look at justice and make a decision and practice law, which is what their job says they're supposed to do.
Well, and I totally agree with you. And that's always been the problem with that office since Michael Connell got there. And I tell you, just a case in point, Michael Connell was county attorney during a case I'm not sure if you're familiar with or not, when I took on the current Metro Council president, Jim King. He ultimately got the highest fine in Kentucky history through election finance. And he also did a lot of illegal things that he should have been indicted for. Hart McGibbon, the special prosecutor who was appointed in that case, said that he had plenty of evidence to indict Jim King, but still refused to indict him. And that was because of the relationship through the county attorney's office of Michael Connell, because Michael Connell and Jim King are close. When you talk about ruling with an iron fist and things like that, you know, it's also well known throughout government and to the public like me who stick our nose in government's business. you know, that he has a very quick temper, that he is very reactive. As a matter of fact, he has already told everybody and anybody in government who is public supporting you that when this election is over, if he wins, there's going to be hell to pay, and they're going to be out of a job. That's the kind of iron fist that this runs. So it seems to be a county attorney's office that is built on protectionism of the Democratic elite establishment versus the law, which is supposed to be blind. Is that a good assessment?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really sad, the situation that has come about as a result of my opponent's rulings and belief that he, you know, does get to bully people into doing what he wants. I mean, he has a horrible temperament. We've seen that in the way that he has spoken to judges, which you can, you know, see that information on YouTube. You can see how he's spoken to Judge Burke and Judge Ann Bailey Smith. You know, several of his employees have come out publicly and said that they've been fired because they didn't contribute to his campaign. And, you know, Councilman James is another example of someone who has come out publicly and supported me and then quickly received a lot of flack from that. So it's
there's no doubt.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's not what government should be about. The county attorney's office is to represent every citizen in this community, and, you know, that includes Councilman James, and his role actually is to represent the elected officials, which, you know, I would follow those rules that we're bound by as attorneys, but also to represent, you know, every citizen in the community, which, you know, doesn't mean that you just get to bully people into doing it your way.
Well, and I agree with you there. And you know, in the case of Michael Connell, I mean, it's not just bullying the employees in his office, but as you mentioned, the judges that he is continually, you know, making angry and all kinds of crazy stuff. He just received a sanction, you know, for going after the judges and some of the things that he did last year. He was just sanctioned on all of that. It's clear that this guy has a temperament that is not capable of following the law on its merits, that it has to be a personal and in most cases a partisan divide. I mean, the whole thing with Barbara Shanklin, the way that was carried out, you know, now I have no problem with Barbara Shanklin being charged. I'm the one who brought the charges that led to Judy Greene's impeachment. I have no problem with that. But I did not like the cozy way that all this was set up by Jim King and Mike O'Connell. And that is a very disturbing thing. And quite honestly, it's one of the biggest reasons that when you announced your candidacy, I started looking into you. And the people on our show know that I'm very good at my research. And I'll be honest with you. I like the fact that, you know, you're not tied into the establishment. So the good old boy network, I think you would be a great addition to the county attorney's office to help eliminate that. I see a lot of fire in you. And, you know, and also, I'll be honest with you, I also like the fact that you've been out there 10 years. I kind of want to get into a little bit of your background, if we can, you know, because you've been in Louisville since 1998. You went to the University of Louisville. You've got your law degree and everything else. What have you done in those years? What have you done since you've been in Louisville? What is your background as far as your law practice is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I came up here to go to the University of Louisville and then just fell in love with this city and decided this is where I wanted to call home. As I mentioned earlier, I started as a victims advocate with the Center for Women and Families, and I did that for several years. And I did that while I was in law school. I also worked with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office while I was in law school. And then when I left, the very first position I took, that, you know, what I had really had a passion for, was to go to the public defender's office and work with juveniles, work with youth in our community. there are, you know, several reasons my focus was there. I certainly believe that, you know, we do have to start with our youth. We do have to coddle them, make sure that they are given activities, given education, given opportunities to make our community better. And then moved on to working with adults before I left, and I started my own practice. I partnered with my best friend. We have an all-female firm. We focus on criminal defense, family law. We do a little bit of civil rights work as well. And I'm also a court-appointed parents attorney, where I handle what's called dependency, neglect, and abuse cases. So I represent either the parent that has been accused of neglecting or abusing their child, or the parent that has a child that's been in that situation and needs that support from an attorney working with the county attorneys who prosecute those cases.
So
now,
I also
teach trial practice. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, please go ahead. I apologize for interrupting.
I also teach trial practice down at the law school. My law partner, Julie Kalin, and I recently started teaching that as an adjunct class. We both are trial lawyers. That's very important to me. I do think that as county attorney, you know, it is an administrative position, but it's important for me to continue to be in the courtroom to see what's going on, to know how to continue to improve the office.
Well, you know, it's fascinating to me because, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about the troubled youth and everything in our community since the March 22nd riots, the black mob and everything else that went on. You know, that's kind of what I'm getting at, because Michael Connell, to me and most of the people in this community, you know, when you talk about the troubled youth and everything else, they really are clueless. But you've been in the trenches on a daily basis working with these troubled youth through the public defender's office and things like that. You know, Michael Connell says that you don't have the experience to run this office, but isn't that experience working through the worst of the problems that you're going to see in that office, isn't that experience enough? Doesn't that give you more of an experience edge than he himself has? I mean, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, I've been actually working in the court system, working in every aspect of the county attorney's office for, over 10 years in child support and family court and with the dependency, neglect, abuse, and juvenile court and district court. And my work, especially with juveniles, that kind of approach, looking at each person individually and trying to make them successful when they leave the courthouse, I think is something we should really be looking at throughout the district court.
And that seems to be a problem with the county attorney's office today with Michael Connell at the head. It's turned into this political game. It's gamesmanship is what it seems like. It's all about running the money. And it's all about abusing the power. I don't know. Maybe that's my intent.
Right.
We've got to take a break. Have you got time to stick around for a couple more minutes?
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome. Folks, we're going to take a quarter out of the break, and we'll be right back. We are with County Attorney Candidate Karen Faulkner, who is going to be running in the election tomorrow. So stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
I apologize, folks. I think you got about seconds of dead air. And that's because, you know, some of us who have to run the studio and do everything ourselves screw up on occasion. But the good news is we actually admit it. So my apologies. You got 10 seconds because I just didn't hit the button in time. That's just the way it is. Welcome back to the Ed Spraker Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. And I tell you, we're going to get to a couple of calls in just a minute. Ed Martin is joining us. Of course, he ran just a couple minutes late, so he's here now. Ed, you know, you've got to listen a lot to what candidate Faulkner is telling us. Questions?
Well, it starts with a little rhetorical. You know, I listen and we talk about O'Connell quite a bit, and I think one of the things, and it'll get to a question, is O'Connell, when he says run this office, to me as a business owner, that is condescending, because I think Karen will agree, we're dealing with people, whichever side of the case you're on, we're dealing with highly educated people, advanced degrees, pass the bar and things like that. So it's like, you don't run people like that. They have a skill set, they know the job, they know the rules. You set a direction. So when I hear him say things like that, it's just, I think to myself, what is this? Is this Boss Tweed? Pre-Prohibition Chicago or
so what's your question?
Or something like that. It's like you manage it, yes, but you don't run it. You hire good people, you set a tone, you set a direction, and you go
with
it. I just wonder if Ms. Faulkner agrees with more of that mindset, but you don't browbeat people with advanced degrees. You just don't do it.
Okay, Karen?
Well, I mean, I obviously agree with that sentiment. You know, I do think that we should be putting the county attorney's office back into the hands of the county attorneys. Certainly, there needs to be some guidance. But these assistants know how to do their job. Many of them have been there for years and are very experienced, very good attorneys. You know, some of the newer ones might need a little bit more training when they first come in, just like they do at the Commonwealth Attorney's Office and they do at the Public Defender's Office. You know, they work with the younger, newer attorneys, but, you know, many of these attorneys are very experienced and actually could teach my opponent a couple of things. This isn't a business. These are people, and that means the people that work for the county attorney's office, but it also means the people that come into the district courthouse. Whether they're victims, whether they're police officers, whether they're defendants. I mean, these are people. They're not numbers, and they need to be treated as such.
Well, here's my thought. You know, I'm a firm believer that when you're in a position of leadership and power, that you lead by example. So when we look at that premise, you know, is the example that Michael Connell is setting, which basically comes off as a hot-tempered, angry 2-year-old child who's going to stomp and storm and throw a tantrum, is that the example that we need when we're dealing with an office of adults? I mean, is there a better example? Because I don't see the example that he's setting as one that I would truly recommend to anybody that would be a lead-by-example mentality. When we talk about the assistant county attorneys, you know, I know quite a few of them on a personal level because we talk a lot about different cases because of what I do. You know, and every one of them, bar none, are generally scared to go on record or to generally say much about anything because of the fear of backlash from Michael Connell. Is that the way we need to be running a government office that's accountable to the people?
Right. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It needs to be much more transparent and... You know, the people should be able to know what's going on and the assistant county attorney shouldn't be in fear of losing their job if they're telling facts.
Okay, I'll go with that. I'm going to open up the phone line real quick. We've got a caller here that wants to talk and ask a question. This is Mr. Paul Holliger with Stop Invisible Taxes Organization. How are you, sir?
Hi, folks. Hi, Ms. Faulkner. Hey, listen.
Hi, how
I
are
really
you?
Like, Doing well, thank you. And presumably you're doing well here on Election Eve. I really admire your continual assertion that the people who interact with the justice system here in Jefferson County are people and not just numbers. I really find that refreshing to the nth degree, I might add. But I want to ask a tougher question related to that. We have been conditioned as a society to expect the county attorney as well as the Commonwealth attorney's offices to rack up convictions. How do you balance your personal philosophy with this societal expectation of getting the numbers in the form of convictions? And number two, what is the type of discretion that the assistant county attorneys have at their disposal to decide whether they want to bring the hammer down on a defendant or cut them a break?
Okay.
Well, I'll address the first part of that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Paul, I'm going to put you back in the queue. Is that okay? You can listen there?
Sure.
Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Faulkner. I apologize.
I'll address the first part of that question. I would point out to Paul that, and to all the listeners, that the position of the county attorney is actually statutorily defined. And when you look at that definition, you'll see that the county attorney, their job is to be, quote-unquote, a minister of justice, which requires the county attorney to ensure not only that the victim gets a fair trial, but also that the defendant gets a fair trial. I think that what people want to see is not just numbers, but they want to see the court system working. And right now there is a disillusionment that convictions mean the court system is working. But the reality is it's not working when these people that come into the courthouse are sent back out without any form of understanding or treatment or whatever they may need to be successful, and they're coming right back through, and we're creating a revolving door. Just because your numbers are high doesn't mean it's not the same people coming through over and over again. I absolutely appreciate the concept of, you know, there are people that unfortunately need to be punished. There are people that need to have consequences for their action. But there are also people that may need some sort of treatment or may need some sort of, mental health assessment. And without looking at these cases on an individual basis and providing these services, we are actually spending more money incarcerating people. Our system is not working the way that it is. So
well, that
it
brings
is going
me, that,
to be a tough balance.
Well, I kind of, you know, that brings up an interesting point, though, here, because, you know, and we'll get to Paul's second part of the question in a minute, kind of what are the criteria that you guys decide on moving forward with the case. But it's interesting because we talk about the system being out of balance. We talk about the inflated incarceration rate. You know, and when I look at that, I'm also reminded of some numbers I had a discussion about just last week, actually. And I believe those numbers were that 10,000 cases a day move through the court system right here in Louisville. So when I think of those numbers and I look at this, I mean, it just reinforces that the court system itself has become a revolving door, as you've mentioned.
Right.
You know, and we don't really have the time, the resources, or anything else to look at each case on a case-by-case basis. And so I guess what I'm leading up to is this. How do we balance that imperfect imbalance, if you will, and try to get to the point where we can do this? Because a lot of times, I mean, I've been in front of a judge on some different occasions, and it just looks to be a paper shuffle. They call a defendant and a plaintiff up front. The attorneys for both up front. They make a quick comment, 20, 30 seconds, bam. It's either, you know, pushed back and delayed or something else. You know, it's gotten to the point where it does look like a production assembly line like at a Ford Motor Company. Can we get that balance back? And if so, do you have any idea how to do that through the county attorney's office? I know you can't control the court system, but how can the county attorney's office aid in that endeavor?
Well, I think that we can absolutely do that, and I think that that goes back to the concept that we all have to work together, including the judges, including the witnesses, the officers, and including the county attorney's office. You know, when I become the next county attorney, I will be sitting down with all these people. We'll need to be able to brainstorm and figure out how to make these work better. But I think within the county attorney's office, it's imperative that, you know, people, again, I keep going back to it, but people are treated as people. And it doesn't just have to be a numbers shuffling game. And if, you know, the reality is there are 125 attorneys that work there, and there's 400 staff members. There is the ability to work these cases differently. It's not impossible. Just because this is how we've been doing it doesn't mean that it's the right way and it can't be done. I think that, you know, the county attorney needs to work on connecting to the resources that are available in the community and reaching out to the you know, each district. And there are so many untapped resources out there. It's just, you know, mind-blowing the lack of use of these programs through the court system. Not necessarily court ordering, but, you know, just connecting people with the resources that they need so that they can be successful. It would be a huge step in the right direction.
So essentially, I mean, basically what I'm getting from all this is the first thing you're going to do is call the assistants in and say, hey, look, everything you've been holding back because of the iron fist that was here before is out the window. Let's put it all on the table and see what we can accomplish together.
That
makes sense to me. And on the second part of Paul's question, and Paul, I brought you back in just in case I get this wrong, but I believe the second part of your question was you kind of wanted to know what the criteria were that had to be met in order to move a case forward through the system. Is that correct?
Ms. Faulkner is going to have to have some type of confidence in her assistant to use good judgment as to whether or not to bring the hammer down on a defendant or whether to cut him some slack. And I'm kind of curious as to how that might happen when she gets elected.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, you know, currently I would note that my opponent does not allow the assistants to have the discretion that I think that they should have, are smart enough to have, and are, you know, very good attorneys, and should be able to look at a case and know the law as they've been trained in. That's a huge difference between myself and my opponent. You know, I do believe in the people that work in that office, and I do believe that many of them are very good attorneys. You know, I haven't had the privilege of working with all of them. I've publicly spoken about some of them, and I don't agree with their policies. But the confidence is there and should be there. If my opponent, who says that he believes in them, truly believed in them, then he wouldn't give them tough guidelines that they have to follow on particular cases. That should not be the policy. The judgment is there and is sound. You just have to trust your employees to exercise it. Obviously, there has to be some overview of that. There has to be review of that. But that's why the system is set up to have, you know, people that are in charge of the particular division. There's the head of the criminal division, the head of the civil division, and then there are supervisors above that. Just like any other employment situation.
Well, the difference is here, though, and
gotta be-
the difference Well, the difference for me is they'll simply, I mean, in a private sector with a business, you know, you have your business owner, you have your vice presidents or your managers, then your supervisors and your line people. You know, and everybody has a role to play. And if you don't trust that cog part in that wheel, the wheel is going to fail. And that seems to be the difference
right.
when you get into the private sector versus the public political sectors like the county attorney's office currently. I mean, it's always been my belief that the reason you rule people that way is because you've got something to hide. All right, or you're scared and lack the capability of trust. And if you can't have trust in the people that work for you, you don't need to be there. Couple of quick things, and I know I need to let you get off the phone. I've got some more to do, and I've held you long enough. Karen Faulkner has been recognized by Louisville Magazine as one of Louisville Magazine's top lawyers when it comes to juvenile law, which is going to be probably the greatest part of the county attorney's office responsibility, has been recognized for outstanding advocacy by the Department of Juvenile Justice and the Public Defender's Office. You're not going to see that in her opponent. And that adjunct professor of trial practice at the Brandeis School of Law. So you've got all of these qualifications, you know, that... And Michael Connell says that's not enough. I tell you, Ms. Faulkner, I appreciate you being here. I know I'm taking too much of your time. Thank you so much. Folks, we're going to take a quick break and come back. Then me and Martin are going to sit here and nail some of these district council races for you. So sit tight and relax. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Thanks again, Ms. Faulkner.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities.
Operational 858-683-1326 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, just hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we will get to you soon. I really liked Karen Faulkner's matter-of-fact approach to things, and I think that's exactly what's missing right now. You know, I know I sound biased in this race, and I honestly think I am. I like somebody that isn't in their mid-60s and an old dog playing political partisanship games. Somebody that says, hey, you know what, we got to bring everybody to the table and decide on these things together instead of somebody saying this is the way it's going to be and deal with it. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I sometimes hate putting the word enlightened into politics because often enough
right.
people try to claim enlightened. But I think... when I hear, like I say, it really bothers me when people, there are certain things people say, like run this office, and I do. I think of boss, yeah, I think of these party bosses, the legendaries, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, she's enlightened. I mean, I understand in some cases you have to run it, you know, given the skill set and whatever's going on. But I like that she's doing that. I like that she approaches it and actually shows more respect. And she seems to be just full of respect for both the people who'll be working for her and the people, you know, in some cases the attorney should be working against. It's like, look, we're all grown-ups here.
Right.
You know, and as I always say, is if you got, you've got one job, and that is, you know, in the big picture, to protect society from people who would do them harm. That, you know, that means in some cases, as she said, it means you've got to try to reform people. You've got to try to get them on the right track. It's not just about conviction rates, because sometimes all you're doing is hitting, is turning on the supercharger on people who will do society harm when you run them out of options with convictions. I'm also in favor of restorative rights. So,
oh, I agree.
I mean, I like her enlightened approach, you know, not condescending, but professional and experienced. And I, part of me just sits and thinks that, gosh, the staff just has, you know, quietly, of course, since O'Connell's a bully, the staff has to be quietly thinking, God, I hope she pulls this off.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know,
wow, we actually have potential to be respected, you know, after all of our experience and all of our education. And if she gets in there, she's going to respect the people. The people that work for her are going to respect her, and she's going to respect them. And that's just, you know, if I ever have to go to court, I don't want to go in there with somebody who's having a bad day because their boss is a prick.
Well,
I'll
tell you, you know.
And I have to deal with that person. I want somebody who can go in, has latitude, you know, and you go to the court, and it's all about respect.
Well, I tell you. I agree with that. I mean, it always comes down to respect. But I tell you, if there's a place in government that we really need to make changes at, that I think are reasonable changes, and I think have reasonable expectations, I think the county attorney's race tomorrow is a good place to start, because, you know, all the things, you know, we've been talking so much about the youth violence and everything else and the revolving door, you know, the conviction rates and all of that, and it's interesting. And, Paul, I've got your mic open, so you can jump in if you want to, but it's interesting when we talk about the conviction rate, because, you know, that was exactly what Hart McGibbon decided on Jim King. He said he had all the evidence in the world. He could, the indictment against Jim King would have been the easiest thing in the world for him to do. But then he followed up and said he refused to indict him because he could not guarantee a 100% conviction. So when we look at the conviction rates and things like that, I kind of have to ask the question, do you just, you know, take the ones that you're 100% sure you can convict? Or are you supposed to apply justice blindly and prosecute a case that should be prosecuted? You know, Paul, you brought up the conviction rate. I'm kind of curious to see if Ms. Faulkner was able to kind of handle what you were asking.
Well, her answer at this stage in where she is probably as good an answer as she can muster, simply because that issue is quite nebulous. And that is, it's going to require a lot of initial training of all the assistant county attorneys for her to define what the standards are, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then to make the program even better, says she's going to have some way of following up and assessing the decisions being made, presumably with a follow-up schedule that will allow her to make changes fairly quickly before a particular assistant gets way out of line. But at this juncture, I think she offered an answer that was satisfactory, because until she gets in there, she really doesn't know how big the problem is or exactly the exact nature of the problem.
Well, I think, you know, for me personally, I mean, Michael Connell was quoted as you know, when he was told that he had a hot temper, you know, and things like that. I mean, he never denies any of that, by the way. He admits it. But he also made a quote in the Courier Journal article a couple of weeks ago that this is not a nursery school we run down here. Our job is to protect the public, and I don't have any apologies about any of it. Now, here's the thing. If your job is to protect the public, then why do you do personal stuff like the case with me, for example, keeping it a year and a half, wasting public resources and everything else on something that should have never happened and been dropped right away? I mean, the chief of police, Steve Conrad himself, apologized and wanted this thing to go away. And instead, They kept it open a year and a half, waste court resources, ended up having to mediate a settlement with me, costing more money, all of these different things combined. So it doesn't appear that he cares about protecting the public. Now, as far as understanding that this isn't a nursery school that they run down there, that's absolutely true. However, the one thing I did like about Karen Faulkner is she said, you know, we need to bring everybody to the table and get all of this stuff. So I like that open way of communication. That is definitely missing in a county attorney's office today. And, yes, Michael Connell, I know if you win tomorrow that I'm going to be arrested again, and you're going to harass me again because you don't like me, especially after tonight because you're threatening everybody else. But I really don't care. Does that make sense? Do you like that idea that she's willing to have this open policy that says, hey, look, I don't have all the answers. Let's sit down and figure it out together.
According to her website, she's big on transparency. And again, when you're a candidate, it's fairly easy to be big on transparency. Once you get into the office, though, will she follow through on this being big on transparency? You know, anyone who gets elected to office promises all sorts of things before they get elected. Once they get in, some of those campaign promises kind of go by the wayside, you know?
Well, I will tell you this much. Karen Faulkner was in the public defender's office for 5 years, and when it came to any cases that she had, there was no problem with transparency. She wasn't in a situation – well, you're actually in a situation now where you're trying to fight because of an open records request. And there was no problems with transparency. I think based on the last 10-year history and everything that I've been able to research, that's really not gibberish as a campaign promise. But, you know, I agree with you. When you get in office, things change, especially when all the pressure is on you. So it would be kind of curious to see that. Ed, go ahead. You were getting ready to say something. I apologize.
Well, I was going to say we don't have transparency now. So even if it wasn't one, you know, transparency is sort of a subjective term, how transparent. It is the court system, after all. You know, some things we're not privy to. But can it be any worse? You know, it can't really get more political and it can't get more opaque. And so, I mean, this is one of those elections that, you know, I decided to actually register a major party so I could vote in some primaries. And, you know, I look at this one and think, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I should just, if I'd have known seen this one coming down the pike, maybe I would have registered Democrat so I could vote for Ms. Faulkner. But, alas, I cannot. So.
Well, I agree with you. And that, I think, is going to be the biggest obstacle tomorrow to overcome is the fact that, you know, you do have two Democrats running in this, so it's a Democratic primary. They're going to select the next county attorney because no Republican stepped up to the plate, so we can't really get a November election. It's interesting, though, because I kind of like the idea. Here you've got Karen Faulkner, who's 34 years old, so she's more in touch with anything on the street based on her experience and her age, if you will, than Michael Connell will ever be. Michael Connell has always been a political hack. It would give us a chance to have the first female county attorney. So that'll destroy the good old boy network, at least from that aspect of it. I think those are good things. And when you look at the fact that Michael Connell has been admonished by the Kentucky Bar Association for his actions against the judges last year, he's constantly fighting with defense lawyers, judges, and everybody else every chance he gets. There is no cooperation. There is nothing between this judicial system here in the county that could be construed as a positive anywhere. When you look at the amount of cases that run through here, the bickering just makes it worse. So it kind of gets to the point, I would think, just as in life, when you're bickering constantly, then it gets to the point where you're never going to accept anything unless you're right, and no side is going to give in to that. So it kind of, you know, it gives us a great distinction and a real possibility, because if we can get somebody in the county attorney's office that will do the job the way it's supposed to be, that will promote cooperation between all of these. And I like the fact that she thinks there ought to be less incarceration. I do like that a lot, because we see so many times the jails get overcrowded with people who get, you know, with a couple of joints, for example. You know, a little bit of marijuana, when there's real criminals out there who are skating by scot-free. Those things I took away as positive. Would either of you agree?
Oh, I wish I could vote for her, because it is about protecting the public. O'Connell, you know, hey, after so many years, he got that right. But protecting the public is not just about conviction rates. It's not about running the office and, you know, with an iron fist. it's about seeking solutions. Yeah, sometimes you got to lock people up and lock them up for a long time. I'll give you that. But I also like that Ms. Faulkner, when she spoke of the revolving door and incarceration, she also addressed the financial aspect of it. Like, you know, yes, we protect society, but she's also aware that for the sake of a conviction rate, we don't ramp the cost up because, hey, Kentucky's broke. So that appeals to me as well, that she's cognizant of that, and I appreciate that as a taxpayer.
No, I can agree with that. I want to switch gears, though. We've only got a few minutes left, and tomorrow is Election Day. First of all, for you regular listeners and anybody else that's listening, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, we will be doing the election night coverage, if you will. We'll be talking about some things, but we'll also be checking in every few minutes and making sure of what the results are and what the early looks are. So we'll know about this tomorrow. But, you know, we've got to talk about another important race tomorrow, and that's for U.S. Senate. The Republican primary, of course, has Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin as the top two. And then, of course, you've got the Democratic primary, which nobody really seems to think is available, but you do have other options. But for your Senate race for the Republicans, you've got five actual candidates: Mitch McConnell, Chris Payne, Shauna Sterling, Matt Bevin, and Brad Copus. And in the Democratic primary, you've got Brent Leichty, Tom Rechtenwall, Burl Farnsley, I hate to even mention this guy's name, and then Alice in Wonderland Grimes. So, you know, those are your primaries for the Senate. All the pressure seems to be on Mitch McConnell versus Matt Bevin. They've pretty much discounted the other three candidates. And the last poll that I saw had Matt Bevin losing by about 30 points, which was just a day or two ago. Does Matt Bevin have any shot in this race?
No, I'm indifferent. This race has left me completely unimpressed all the way around. Mm-hmm. I would say, well, actually, statistically, anybody has a chance because they're talking about anywhere from 12 to 20% turnout. So, yeah, boy, you know, if all of Bevin's people show up and only, you know, and McConnell's people read those numbers and go, it's in the bag, and they don't go, you know, we could get a real interesting lesson in voter turnout. But
right.
Yeah. I'd say with a reasonable turnout, the weather's going to be nice. I'd say McConnell is going to roll over Bevin, and it's, you know, as the exit polling and stuff starts, I think it only gets worse. I think they see the writing on the wall at that point.
Bevin's got a real good chance, Ed. He's got a real good chance. If McConnell dies between now and 6 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow, Bevin is in, buddy. He's in.
Well, McConnell still, I think, actually, at that point, Rashear gets to appoint McConnell's replacement.
Not before. Not before the election.
A little bit like that. Unimpressed completely, and just some of the amateur hours things that have come out of the Bevin campaign. Bit of a disappointment. Matt's a nice guy, and he's an intelligent guy, successful guy, and I think he's sincere. But boy, you know, you picked a hell of a race for your first race, and his staff just, you know, in particular, not that it's a central issue, you know, the whole cockfighting thing is like, oh, damn. You know, especially if you could have that one back.
Well, Alice in Wonderland Grimes should too, because she's been named in an affidavit as saying that, you know, she agreed with cockfighters and cockfighting should be allowed. And we'll get into that after the primary, so we'll get into more of what's going on next week. But, you know, it's interesting too, because when you look at Mitch McConnell, you know, we've talked a lot about Matt Bevin being the so-called Tea Party candidate. Now, the Louisville Tea Party has endorsed Matt Bevin, and he's got some other Tea Party endorsements. But, you know, Tea Party Nation, you guys know who Tea Party Nation is, they actually slammed Matt Bevin, Tea Party activist Matt Bevin, is half promoted, as a horrible candidate, and they refused to endorse him in a primary. The group's founder, Tea Party Nation founder, Judson Phillips, you know, had initially thrown us behind McConnell last year for re-election. Of course, this is before Matt Bevin ever came on the stage. You know, but he withdrew that endorsement after the government shut down because it felt like Mitch McConnell wasn't doing his job, and they worked against Tea Party great favorite Ted Cruz. Well, since all this has gone on, you know, it's interesting that Tea Party Nation has said, you know what, going with Mitch McConnell, because they now believe Matt Bevin is a fake conservative and a lousy campaigner, a horrible candidate is the way they put it. So, you know, that's interesting because even the Tea Party is split now. And that actually is an interesting thing to me because the Tea Party has been successful by standing together, and now they've even split within the Tea Party. So I find that an interesting thing. And, you know, another thing we really ought to talk about before we run out of time, and we're almost there now, but let's look at, you know, the 32nd House race. That's going to be really, really interesting as well because when we talk about the Tea Party versus the establishment, I don't think there is a better example of that than the Shelley May Phil Moffitt race. Thoughts, Ed?
Well, you know, Phil is he has identified with Tea Party. He's not making that like his absolute thing. I mean, Shelley is, let's face it, she's the absolute insider. She's former head of the GOP in Jefferson County or whatever you want to call it. So, but I think from what I've seen, if the voters are informed in that district, Phil wins in a romp. Because, I mean, whether it comes to Ryan Alessi or Joe Elliott, any medium, any opportunity for debates, Phil he articulates better. He is much more well-defined on what he – and again, I like Shelley, but I watched her Alessi interview, and it was just painful. It really was. It, you know, a whole bunch of I don't knows and things like that. I think where we're at in the state, and you know, if Shelley gets it and goes on to be the state, it should be a fine. I think she'll be all right. But I think if you're looking for somebody to get in there and kick some shins, and you know, has clearly enumerated what their agenda is about, you know, the pension, tax reform, things like that. Phil is much more focused, and as a business person, and a person that has some young children who are going to, you know. Blessed are the young before they inherit the debt. I'm really hoping they're more informed and they get Phil queued up because he's ready to go. I mean, he gets to Frankfort, he knows what he wants to do because there's not a lot of time to waste anymore.
Well, they're not. The only thing that's curious to me is though, sometimes when you run as a candidate and you lose a race or two. You kind of get labeled as this perennial candidate who doesn't win. You know, Phil is in that position right now. What he did during the governor's race when he ran out of primary against David Williams was phenomenal. I mean, he had a budget of about $140,000 instead of a few million. And, you know, he made David Williams work for the nomination. And David Williams was a pretty bad candidate to begin with. So, you know, when we look at all of this, I mean, Phil carried 35 counties throughout the state. But more importantly, in the district that he's in the 32nd district, he got 17 of the 35 precincts to vote for him for governor. So it's clear that at least half the district, you know, was siding with him at least in the governor's race. But now, you know, we look at this, you know, Phil and Shelley really haven't spent a lot of money. They haven't had a lot of money to spend on this particular race. But being establishment in the 32nd district, you know, I kind of feel like that has an advantage. I really do. You know, Shelley is known in the district as being a GOP faithful, if you will. Phil, you know, with the Tea Party situation right now, some ways split, some ways not, I think it's really just a matter of who can engage enough of the base to go out and vote. And typically establishment voters are the ones who go vote.
I'm thinking there's some residual left over from Phil's aggressive, albeit underfunded, gubernatorial run. He presented pretty well on that. I think the residual from that is going to carry him.
Oh, I'm not saying there's not residuals. To be honest with you, whoever wins this, Moffitt or May, I'm going to be happy. I think both are great candidates, in my opinion, and I'm going to be happy no matter who wins it. I actually think this is going to be one of the better primary kinds we're going to see. So I'll actually be happy either way. Paul, any thoughts on that?
Well, I tend to think that Phil's going to that Phil has a much, much better following than what we know about. And I'll tell you why I say that. The local media has not been putting any effort into that race. I've not seen any television reports. I've not heard any radio reports. I've not seen any printed reports. It is almost if that Moffitt is, in fact, the leader, according to private polling, because the local media here in Louisville, Kentucky, absolutely does not want to give anyone that is remotely connected to the Tea Party any credibility. And Shelley May is clearly establishment. So the fact that we aren't hearing anything from that race in the local media suggests that Moffitt is probably doing better than what we now know. But come this time tomorrow, we probably will know how well Moffitt is doing.
You know, I kind of look at it an opposite way there, though, all based on the way you just described it, because if they're so scared of the Tea Party and Phil Moffitt, even though they don't want to give him any credibility, they you would think that they would back the establishment candidate and Shelley May then, to some degree, wouldn't you, just to keep the Tea Party out? You know,
I know they go against a liberal tendency. If they give any Tea Party candidate any cred, they're scared to death here before the election that it may carry over to other Tea Party-leaning candidates. I think they're quite content to take their lickings in one race and make sure that the other races are unaffected.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I actually think the media would probably want to see Phil win, because this bet I will make, this election night I will make for sure, or at least the day after, as soon as the 32nd is over and we know who the Republican nominee is, rags like the Courier-Journal and everybody are going to double down and make sure we all know who the Democrat is. They've already gone above and beyond. So
bingo.
I'm here to tell you, the podcast media, maybe not so much, but boy, you know, they're going to give the winner of the Republican in the 32nd, they're going to give that winner about 8 seconds worth of airtime or three lines.
I fully expect
here to dedicate about 15 to 18 lines to the Democrat opponent who has yet to campaign.
I think you might be right on that. At that race, I think, though, I agree with you. I think Phil does have some residual votes there. I think he did a great showing in the governor's race. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He did pull in half of the precincts in the 32nd district that he's now running in. So, you know, I think he's got all that. You know, I'm just curious because the establishment candidates, typically the establishment voters, will always show up at the polls. So it's really going to come down for me on how many of the Tea Parties actually go out and vote, because it's going to be an interesting paradox. I think it's going to be a close race. In this particular race, I won't even put a prediction on it. I think it's going to be a close race, but I think Shelley May and Phil Moffitt, either one, has a great chance at it. And that's a weird situation for me, because usually I've got something else to say. So it's going to be interesting. But the Senate race we'll be watching for sure.
I think, in the Republican primary. We're going to put numbers on it. I think Phil's going to stretch it out a little better than you think he is.
Really? Put it on the line. Where you been?
Yeah. I'm thinking Phil probably pulled double digits.
You think Phil Moffitt wins by double digits? I think that district is going to be decided by less than five either way. That's my prediction. Paul, want to weigh in?
Okay. I think y'all got it covered.
All right. Well,
you know,
got
you always could have weighed in at 7 or 9 or something. It sort of split the difference, Paul.
By the way, who's the Democrat nominee out that way for the fall?
For the fall, you know, I'm not even looking at that right now. I really have not looked at that. Had no reason to. There's no primary for that right now. It's a 32nd district. To be honest with you, it's not really going to matter. I mean, the 32nd district is going to go GOP Republican or Tea Party. Whoever wins this primary tomorrow night, the seat is still going to be in a Republican hand, whether you're a Tea Party or an establishment candidate. I just don't ever see a Democrat winning that district in today's day and age. But, of course, that could just be me. All right, folks, I tell you, we have went online, you know, we went over time and everything else. We had a chance to speak with Jefferson County Attorney candidate Karen Faulkner tonight. We talked a little bit about Senate race and the 32nd District House race. You know, I tell you, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, when we get back on. We'll be doing, of course, all the wrap-up stuff and your up-to-date things. Ed Martin will probably not be with us. So, you know, it'll be me. So get ready for it, man. We're going to have a good time. Paul, thanks so much for calling in tonight and checking in. I appreciate the heck out of it. Ed Martin, final thoughts. Hello, Ed.
You got me?
Yeah, hello. I got you now. Final thoughts, man.
Okay, that's weird. I literally just moved about 3 feet. But the final thoughts would be, and I hear it all the time, you know, everybody says they need to get out and vote. And I agree. Right now they're talking 12 to 20% or so, which when you think about it mathematically, you really can, at that point, a small number of motivated people can bend an election in a way that the larger group does not want it to go. You know, at the end, you wake up the next morning and say, what the hell just happened? So, by all means, get out and vote. I've been making jokes about it from day one. I've always said, if we could just have the option on our ballots to vote none of the above, I guarantee the Secretary of State and the county clerk and everybody else, I guarantee you we'll get 50% or higher participation rate every time. Now, the candidates would be terrified of it. None of the above. Wouldn't you love to be able to voice your opinion on a ballot with that one? But, you know, joking aside, get out and vote because, like I say, you don't want to wake up the next morning and basically have your party, your candidate, you know, perhaps your potential representative from your district or state or whatever. You don't want to wake up and say, what the hell happened? How the hell did that happen? How the hell did that person win? Well, sometimes they win because you didn't vote. So get out and make your voice heard tomorrow.
Well, there you go, and I totally agree. I mean, you know, the bottom line is the election process is set up to give us a chance to get involved in the system. You know, it's up to us to choose who our leaders are. I never make any bones about who I support and who I don't. Karen Faulkner in the Jefferson County Attorney's race tomorrow is somebody that I am supporting. That is not why she was on there. It was scheduled for tonight, and I actually didn't speak with Ms. Faulkner until late last week. So, you know, I spoke with her late last week because I wanted to find out more about her after all of my research to be better informed for tonight's show. So this isn't a situation, you know, like that, but make of it what you will. But I think that it's time to make changes where we can. The county attorney's race is one way to do that. We have district metro council races that, you know, we have people that are stepping down. Ken Fleming, you know, is stepping down. Tina Ward Pugh is stepping down. So these are wide open races for new faces. You know, and it's time to really get involved. I would love to see some changes. I think most of us would, but the change really truly has to start with each of you. Because change is only going to happen when each of you and we collectively get involved in the process and make that change happen. Sitting at home and then griping about the election process because only 10 or 15% showed up to vote isn't making a change. It's accepting the same old fate of your life. Make a difference in your life and get involved and see what happens. Because until you're willing to do that, we're stuck with the same old mess we've always had. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, I'll be here. We'll see you then. Paul, thanks again for the call. Mr. Martin, I guess we'll see you next week.
Well, we'll see what goes on tomorrow. I mean,
okay.
You know, I've been invited to the opportunity to go to some places and, you know, shoot pool, drink beer, talk politics as the results come in.
So you're going to a results party.
I'm going to bring my cue if I go to a certain one, so that's kind of hard for me to not do. But we'll see. If I end up working late and I'm all filthy, then I'll probably call in.
Well, give us a call either way, even if you do go to one. Let us know what the atmosphere is. All right. That's it for tonight, folks. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7. Have a great night. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.
Bye-bye.